Okay, we are in John chapter 9, and we started this part of our study last time, week before last, and anybody remember what we were talking about concerning this man born blind? You're talking about labels, okay? About the labels that we put on people, and the labels that we use oftentimes, and kind of labeling folks based on you know, sometimes relationships. In other words, sometimes we label people, we said, because we don't know their real name, so we refer to people by perhaps the job they have or the place we see them all the time. It's like, you know, the guy down at the gas station or the woman at the grocery store, you know, that we see all the time, and that kind of thing. The problem with that we were discussing is that a lot of times that label that we give to someone becomes their identity. Okay, so to us, that's who they are. And what happens with labels is that when we label somebody, most of the time all we see is the label itself. And we never really get to see the person that's behind that label and get to know the person. We know the label, but we don't really know the person as a person. And remember that I asked you, was telling you about the question that the professor, you know, had on a test. He said, what is the custodian's name, you know, here at the school? And nobody could answer the question. Nobody knew. They just knew that was the custodian. And that's typically what we do with people in certain things, certain positions and things of that nature. We just label someone. We don't ever make an attempt to get to know them, to know their name or know anything about them. We just know them as a label. We look at people, in other words, we talked about those who are liberals. We label people as liberals or conservatives. We label them as saints or sinners. We label people, we talked about, as homosexuals or homophobes. We have typically these kinds of labels that we use for different groups of people or different people, especially when they are different from us. But again, the problem with that is when we use labels, then we don't get to know the person. Okay? The person behind the label. And so we were talking about this blind man, and we were looking at it from the standpoint of, you know, this idea of labeling people and how Jesus' encounter with this man and all of the other people that are involved in this story with him and the labels that they, in a sense, kind of place on this particular man. This man is blind from birth, and the first group of people that we talked about in this as they encounter this man is the disciples, who basically their view of him was he was a topic of a religious discussion. And so, you know, they see him, they say, Jesus, you know, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was blind from birth? And so for them, the label was, he's a blind person, but he's also, here's a good opportunity for us to have a religious or theological discussion on the merits of sin and the results of sin and so forth. And so that's really all they saw in this man was the topic of a religious discussion. Okay, to clear up some things that, you know, have been taught. His neighbors. What was the label that the neighbors had placed on him? What now?
Where he was from.
Not Jesus. We're talking about the blind man. Well, he was a beggar. Yeah, that's the label that they had placed on him. Remember the confusion after he had received his sight? There was confusion amongst his neighbors. Isn't this the blind man that used to sit and beg all the time? And some said he was, and some said he wasn't. Well, you know, how could you not know? Well, because you never knew him. You just knew him as a blind beggar. Label. And then we talked about the Pharisees and the teachers of the law as another group of folks that got to know him or didn't get to know him, but their label for him or their was really that he was a problem. Okay, to them, this man was a problem because he was no longer blind, he could now see, and because Jesus healed him on the Sabbath, that presented a real difficulty for them. See? Because they couldn't deny the miracle that had taken place, but then at the same time, here's Jesus is a problem for them because he's bringing in some teaching that is challenging their institution and their institutionalized religion. So far, as I recall in our study from last time, we had looked at those three groups of people. Let's talk about the parents. They're another group here that, in a sense, has labeled this man. Okay? And basically, the parents' label for him is just simply a family role. Okay? In other words, he has a position in our family. He's you know, yes, he is our son. Okay? But beyond that, they didn't really have much for him, did they? Well, you go back and you look at the situation here. He's our son, they admit. Okay? That's his position in our family, but nothing more. Okay? Nothing more. Look at the response, and basically what's happening is, again, the Pharisees are having a difficult time dealing with Jesus healing this man. Okay? And they're trying to get answers out of him. You know, how did you get healed and so forth? He explains to them, you know, this man told me he spit on the mud and put mud on my eyes, and I washed and I was able to see. I don't know. I don't even know who it was. Because he couldn't see him when he did it. You see? So he didn't know who it was. So they're trying to figure out, ask him, and they can't get the answers they want from him, so they go to the parents. In fact, John tells us here, they had the parents brought in. Okay, what does that tell you? Yeah, I mean, this is an investigation that they have launched into, okay? And we can't get straight answers from this guy, so they send people to go and bring the parents in. All right, now, you have to understand something. You know, when you ruffle the feathers of the religious elite, okay, for those folks back then, that was not a good thing. Because punishment for doing those kinds of things was to be banished or kicked out of the synagogue. All right, in other words, you're excommunicated. So there's a certain fear of that. So they have these parents of this man brought in, and they begin to question them. Look at beginning in verse 18. The Jews still did not believe that he had been blind and had received his sight until they sent for the man's parents. I'm in John chapter 9. They sent for the man's parents. Is this your son? They asked. Is this the one you say was born blind? How is it that now he can see? Now look at their response to this. Okay? We know he is our son, and we know he was born blind. But how he can see now, or who opened his eyes, we don't know. Ask him. He is of age. He will speak for himself. And then John gives us this note. His parents said this because they were afraid of the Jews. For already the Jews had decided that anyone who acknowledged that Jesus was the Christ would be put out of the synagogue. And that was why his parents added, he is of age. Ask him. Okay? So in this sense, the family label, okay, he is our son, in a sense kind of becomes a protective label. Okay? In other words, that kind of puts a shield between them and the problems that would otherwise come up. In other words, if they jump in and start defending him, yes, he's our son and we love him and, you know, and we don't know how this happened, but, you know, then they're in jeopardy. So we have a real convenient label. The family physician. Yes, he's our son. That's all we know. Okay. If you want to know anything else, then you have to ask him. He's our son. He was born blind, but we have no idea how he can see now. Ask him. He's of age, and what is that really saying? We are not responsible for what he does. He's just our son. He's of age himself. Okay? What's the problem with that in the sense of, you know, this, these are his parents. What do you see here that, that just doesn't fit right?
Motherly love.
I mean, you know, here's the parents of this man who was born to them blind. What parent wouldn't be immediately filled with joy that their son, their child who had been blind all of his life, could now see? They didn't know who did it. They didn't know how it happened, but they knew he'd been blind all his life. But there's no rejoicing with him at all that he can now see.
David is for the sake of fear, though.
Yeah.
Because they knew how much power they had over him. Yeah. But other than that, I'm pretty sure they were joyful.
You know, at home, maybe.
Perhaps so. Yeah. They weren't expressing it. They were afraid. Publicly, they were afraid. Now, how does that relate to us? Do we have to do anything like that? They sometimes put labels because of the public pressure. Okay. And it doesn't necessarily have to be just our children, but just that we're afraid of, you know, the pressure that somebody else is going to put on us. Maybe it's our employer. Or our neighbors, or whoever. Whoever we might be afraid of the repercussions from. See? And so, it's much easier to just label a person and then kind of distance yourself from them rather than taking ownership or knowledge of that person. See, again, the bottom line of all of this is that you always have to remember, what are we dealing with here? What are we dealing with? Not people who, just... What's the first word? People, thank you. We're dealing with people. You see? That's at the bottom line of all of this. We're talking about people, not labels. You see? It's people. And Jesus never forgot that. Tim, you had your hand up a minute ago.
Yeah, what you were talking about, I noticed in society, I noticed myself, those labels have been coming through the grave. And I think that people do it unconsciously, subconsciously, and voluntarily. Before you even, it's like the problem is right here, are surrounding you. Before you know it, you're right there in the middle of it. Before you know it, you're there.
Yeah.
I mean, that's.
You're talking about the people that have the label.
Yeah. Well, both. I mean, no. But I mean, the people that give the label. But at this time, you don't think that you're labeling somebody, but actually, you know. You're not doing it on purpose, like, but you're labeling somebody. I call myself, I'm talking about something, somebody or less people.
And I think that's true, but I think also the people that are labeled tend to take on that label as their identity. You ever heard anybody, and maybe you've done this, in talking about perhaps your job at work? I'm just the janitor, I'm just the secretary, or I'm a label. Okay. Nancy, you have your hand up, and then...
of it. I have cancer. One. I'm sorry, though.
Okay.
This has been a long time.
Well, thank you for sharing that with us.
I'm a Christian, but don't let people feel so caught. And I pray I don't do it.
Well, I appreciate you sharing that with us and opening up. It took a lot of courage to do that. Thank you. And that's what we're talking about is, you know, the Jesus touch doesn't put labels on people. Jenny?
I don't want to put labels on mother-in-law.
Yes, they do. And mothers and moms put labels on daughters and daughters.
That's right. But I don't know what's that. But anyway, it's got your mother, your husband, your mother, your mother-in-law.
Another good example of how we. And you, so you see how, you know, even within families, and that's what we're talking about here. This is the man's parents. But because of whatever outside pressures we might be feeling, it's much easier to deal with someone as a label, you see, than it is risking being, you know, punished in some way, whether it's, you know, kicked out of the family or kicked out of the synagogue or whatever it might be. So we put the label on. And then we put a distance between them and us.
Also, you have to be careful what you say about people calling them labels
because of the discipline. Yeah, you can that too. You can that. Okay. So, We've talked about, you know, how the disciples saw this man and the label they had for him, you know, how the neighbors saw him and the label they had for him, how the Pharisees saw him and the labels they had for him, and how the parents saw him and the label they had for him. But what about Jesus? How did Jesus see this man? Okay? When Jesus looked at this man, what did he really see? He saw a whole person. Okay? Jesus saw a whole person, not a lady. He didn't see a question to be debated on a theological standpoint. He didn't see a problem. He didn't see a beggar. Okay? And he didn't see him just simply as a position in a family. He saw him as a real live person. Right? And not only did he see him as a person, but Jesus also, and don't miss this part because this is really important, Jesus saw him as an opportunity for God. Okay? An opportunity for God and to work on God's behalf, you see, in this person's life. Go back over to verse 3. Okay, now again, when you look at the disciples' question, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? And Jesus answers that question by expressing the opportunity that this man and his situation brings to the glory of God. Who's got verse 3? What does he say here?
Jesus answered, "Neither can this man say, nor his parents, but that the work of God he made it known for us."
Okay. Why was this man born blind? To be healed. Show the power of God in his life. Now, when we look at that, and someone might ask, well, isn't that rather cruel of God to have this man be born blind and be blind all of his life? I don't know how old he was, but he was a man, okay, by their standard. Isn't that kind of cruel of God to having been born blind and live that way all of his life, just so that at this particular time, God could be glorified? Any response to that?
To this man's affliction,
okay.
many believed and came to know Jesus.
Okay.
Oh, so he's God's creation. You know, it's up to God. He's the potter. However he makes him.
Does God have a right to do that?
Yep.
When we think about today, the same thing still happens, but people don't realize the technology that we have to help people with those issues, that's still the power of God. That's God being glorified.
Okay.
And I think we're looking at a person like this as being imperfect. God doesn't.
Yeah. Is there anything wrong with this man?
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, physically, he was blind. And that presents a tremendous amount of hardship and difficulty, especially in his time. Okay? But have you considered the story of Job? What's the message, overall message of the story of Job?
God is in charge.
God is sovereign. And he doesn't owe us an explanation for anything. And I think that sometimes we look at situations like this and we look at the negative aspects of it. Okay? And we say, how terrible that is. And then, of course, there are those who would say, well, you see, that means that God is not a very good God. He's not a fair God that he would put somebody through that just to glorify him. But when you go back and you understand God's purposes, okay, God's purpose is not simply for us to have a good life in this world. It's part of it. We're going to talk about that a little bit more later on in our worship time. But ultimately, God's purpose is reconciliation with his creation for eternity. Okay? And so whatever hardship or difficulties a person would live in this life, okay, if those hardships and difficulties in one way or another bring them to relationship with God, then is not God's ultimate purpose realized in that person's life? Okay. So yeah, in other words, he suffered blindness all of his life, or however many years he was living, up until the point that Jesus healed him. Okay. And then the end result of that was he put his faith in Jesus. Okay. James tells us that our life lasts how long? Yeah, you are a mist or a vapor, he says. We all know what that means, right? Okay. It's nothing compared to eternity. So whatever hardship or difficulty or suffering that we experience in our life here, okay, it is mere seconds, okay, in terms of the time of all eternity. It's not the difficulties and the hardships that we experience in this life, it's what we do with them, or what we allow them to do to us. Okay? You always have to be looking at the outcome of that. What happens in the end? What do we do with the situation that we're in at the time, and how do we endure that again, we're going to talk a little bit more about that in a little bit. But then ultimately, what happens when this life is over, and whatever suffering, whatever difficulty, whatever hardship we face in this life is no more? Well, there's not but two options. One is that our difficulties and our hardships and problems that we face just got a whole lot worse. Okay? And you think it was bad in here. Okay? You ain't seen nothing yet. Or you spend an eternity where there are no more problems, no more difficulties, no more sorrows, no more tears, no more anything. Only two options there are. But whatever we go through in this life is temporary and short-lived.
I kind of look at the life that we live in here now as preparation for the life that we're going to live when we leave this physical world. So how we learn to deal with the situations here, and how we learn to go through situations with God instead of without Him, will definitely prepare you to live with Him. If we can't live with Him here, what makes us think we can live with Him there? Okay.
Verse 4. Who's got that?
As long as we stay, we must do the work of Him who sent me. Night is coming when no one can work.
Okay. This is the second part of Jesus' response to the disciples' question. Okay. Neither this man nor his parents sinned, but this happened so that God would be glorified. And then he talks about working. Okay? As long as it is day, we must do the work of Him who sent me. What does it mean to do the work of God? What's Jesus talking about here? He says, as long as it's day, we've got to do the work of God, the one who sent me. What's the work He's talking about here?
Prepare us all to try to reach Him.
Okay. That's part of it, but there's something more specific here.
Jesus seemed to, whenever He dealt with people, He found a way to bring God into the equation.
Okay.
To teach. He took every opportunity.
All right, let me stop you here, okay? Because again, you're saying too much.
Okay.
There's only one word here that I'm looking for.
Okay.
What is the work of God? No. What is the work? What is the work? No. What is the work? What is the work of God? It's people. It's people. Yes, to save people, you say, to salvage people. But the bottom line again, as I said a little while ago, it's people. God's work is about people. And so when Jesus tells His disciples here, you know, look, it's daytime and we need to spend our day doing the work of God, what's He referring to? We've got to be focusing on people, you see, because people are in need. And when those who are working for God are helping to take care of people, you see, then they're doing God's work. Because God's work is all about people. Okay? The salvation part is, that's really the ultimate goal, is the salvation of those people. But that's not the only thing. Because until a person dies, okay, and they get to spend eternity in heaven if they've lived for God and so forth, what do they do in the meantime? As they struggle with whatever issues or problems they have. You see, God's work is not just simply about getting to heaven. Okay? That's not what it's all about. It also involves our lives here with people. People struggle and suffer with things all the time. And if we are about God's work, which is what we should be doing, then we should be working on people. And it's not always, by the way, as we're working with people and on people and helping people, it's not always just simply about getting them to heaven. See? Maybe that's the ultimate goal, but it's also about helping them to deal with whatever the problems and struggles and issues and so forth that they're facing. Right? Because they're people. And again, we're going to talk more about this in our lesson, in our worship time this morning, about just the whole aspect of having God in our lives now. Not just focusing on heaven. Okay. But Jesus was all about people, and God's work is in the restoration of people, okay, to relationships. God is in the people business. Okay? What his business is all about. It's people. Why? Because he created people. We are his creation. And his number one priority and concern is people. Okay? So, understanding that, what should we be doing? Okay? What does that mean?
I think it's sometimes looking past the infirmities or the situations that the people are in, because we a lot of times only see that. We don't see the person or what brought him to that situation.
Okay. Look past the labels, in other
exactly.
words.
Exactly.
Okay.
Charlotte made a good, and she taught me a big lesson at that time, and maybe last one time. We were talking about somebody that, and I forget who the person was, but he had committed murder. And Charlotte was bringing it up that we need to pray for him, you know, because we don't know what had happened in that person's life to get him to this point. And that gave me a big aha moment when she said that. So, and I'm always grateful for that. But I think it's true. We only see the action, but we don't see what brought that person to that point.
Yeah.
Or what their internal needs may be to get them past a certain situation or illness, and we forget that sometimes. Unless, I think it's easier when you've experienced the same thing, because then you can easily identify with that person. But we have problems if we've never been there, and then we're too quick to judge.
You know, I think a real great example of that was back, however many years ago it was, a few years back, when that fella killed those Amish children in Pennsylvania, as it was. What was the response of the Amish community, the parents of those children? That was all over the news. What was their response? Yeah. They're praying for him. They forgave him. And the news media went berserk over that. You know? How can you do that? There's people who, you know, got in all kinds of trouble, you know, with some folks. You know, they're not Church of Christ people, but obviously they're not saved. Well, they sure were living in Jesus, weren't they? They didn't see the man as a label called murderer. And the person. Yeah. And there were not a whole lot of people other than them there at his funeral.
Yeah. I read this story about this mother whose son was killed, and she actually went to prison and corresponded with the man that killed her son and got him to come to Christ. And to me, those are awesome stories, because these people look past the action and see the person.
See the person. That's what makes the difference. Okay? Not a label. I was reading a news article just the other day, and guess whose name popped up in this article that somebody was talking about, comparing this part themselves or whoever the situation to Jeffrey Dahmer. Anybody know who Jeffrey Dahmer was? Right? Yeah. Hannibal. Murderer. I don't know how many of you realize it, but Jeffrey Dahmer was converted to Christ in prison. Before death. Because somebody looked past all those labels, made the effort to go to the prison and study the Bible with him, and he had heard the gospel. And that's what Jesus does. He looks past the labels and he sees people. And that's, if we are to be working for God, we need to be focusing on people. We need to make time for people. But mostly we need to look past whatever the labels are. Look for the real person. Jenny, finish us up here. We're out of time. And what happened to you as a result? But you look at a person and not just a label. Okay, we're going to finish this whole study next week. And we're going to finish up with the last part of this chapter in looking at Jesus' later encounter with this man and then Jesus discussing with the religious leaders. So that's where we're going to finish with all of this next Sunday, all right? Thank you all very much.